Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello, I'm Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York.
And I'm Sarah Thompson.
And this is Tea Talks with the Duchess and...
Sarah.
A podcast about our lives, your lives, and how we live them together.
So welcome along to the journey.
First things first, Sarah, let's get that kettle on.
So, we're not sitting in front of each other today.
I know. It's very interesting because you look as though you've already caught the sun. Are you in? Where are you, for heaven's sake?
I am in Spain, although I have to say it is a little bit cloudy today. Not that I'm expecting any sympathy, because it is very lovely. It's 32 degrees. Yeah, it's very nice.
32 degrees. And how? But you're safe and well, and your children are safe and well.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. We're nowhere near fires. That's awful, isn't it? But yeah, no, we're all good. I'm very lucky to be here for sure.
I've been told that you got there in a different way to everyone else. Come on, in a rowing boat, go on.
I rowed all the way. No, well, yeah, I don't know if I have said this on the podcast, but I come from a family of pilots. So yeah, Steve flew us here with my able co-pilot, Josh.
In a plane? What kind of plane?
Well, it's called a TBM. It's a six-seater.
Well, that's why you like me then, because I'm a helicopter pilot.
I know. Yeah, well, they're helicopter pilots too. Well, Harvey is, and Steve is. Well,
that's fantastic. So it's a big change this week for you.
Yeah, big change. Out here for a few weeks. So,
are you having a barbecue tonight?
No, we're out for dinner tonight, actually. Out at a restaurant, one of my favourite on the beach, where you literally sit with your toes in the sand. I love it.
On that note, I worked for Wedgwood for 8 years, and I had the best time because in America, they say, in Britain, we say lay the table, don't we?
Yeah.
And in America, you say set the table, because if you say, oh, I'm going to lay the table, all the Americans go, oh, you're so funny. And so I have a thing about tablecloths and place settings and how everything's done, and I love it, and it's a sort of celebration. So even you sit saying you're sitting there with your toes in the sand, that for me is a celebration that you are grounded to the earth, but you're having the most wonderful celebration with your family. I think that's just a beautiful moment. So when people say, oh, going out for a restaurant is you know, it doesn't have to be, it can be so real. It's just the celebration, which I love.
I completely agree with you. I think the whole concept of kind of having dinner together and the setting is almost more important than the food. So when you were talking about laying the table, I've just got these visions of like royal tables where they're laying for a banquet, which you must have been to, but where they literally get a ruler out to check how far away to, you know, lay each setting. Do you go as far as that when you lay a table, or do you ever lay a table?
Yes, I do. I do. I have a thing about it, but if you watch Downton Abbey, which I watched Downton Abbey, and Alistair Bruce did a brilliant job, and he's the historian on that, and Julian Fellowes, of course, I love Julian, but I watched Downton Abbey again last week because talking about change, the Eugenie has gone with August and the baby to Portugal. And of course, Beatrice is on summer holidays with her children. And so there's a bit of a big change. I'm walking around trying to find loads of toys which are left loitering around, you know. And well, of course, Sienna is at the age where she likes dusting. Yeah, she's not two yet, but this is hers. Yeah. And then Pink Teddy is everywhere. So But Pink Teddy has a very smart crown on it, actually. But anyway, the reason why it's a big change is because, of course, my grandchildren are not here. And so I've got the doggies and I've got the Norfolks, and I'm healing and I'm starting to feel better. And yes, I decided that Julian and Emma Fellows should be my next recipe for healing. And Downton Abbey. And then I went on to The Gilded Age, and there was one line there's many, many lines of course, watching Downton with Maggie Smith. His lines are incredible. Julian wrote beautifully. But in The Gilded Age, there's one moment where Thomas Edison is putting the lights on in New York. And it's the first time people have actually seen lights, you know, and it was just an extraordinary moment. One of the cast, one of the actors, turns to Mrs. Russell and says, "Well, look at this. This, you're really looking at history right now. And who knows what's going to happen in history? It could all change. Well, change for the good or change for the better?" And Mrs. Russell turns around and says, "We have no choice. We have to change with history." And it is very interesting that I picked that one line up about we have no choice, because history will move on and we will move with it. And with it, we will learn various different new technologies and new ways of living, the new language of living. Everything will change, but we cannot keep back history. It will change, and therefore we have no choice but to go with it. And I love that line, especially then when you and Sarah talked today about change.
Yeah, and it is exciting, isn't it? And it's funny because a lot of people are so resistant to change in any format, you know, change at work, change in a family, change room, change this, change that. And there's kind of, but actually embracing change and seeing the exciting things that can come out of it. And then, you know, and yet there are a lot of people that love change and actually get very bored, you know, in situ. And it's funny to think, you know, what makes us different. But I think you can train yourself to get more excited about, you know, really see the opportunities that come with change, because opportunities do come.
Well, yes, and you know that in business, but I know that in life too, is that again back to the mindset, is that it's change is as good as a rest, they say, don't they? I thought to myself, I must go back to doing what I love. And then I thought tea talks. And then that brought me into talking to you about bringing this tea room to life that we've always wanted to do, Sarah, with books as well. And then that's when we started all this tea talks, because you then said, let's make this commercial. Let's really give back. Let's open libraries. Let's really do it properly as a job. So my vision of what I've always wanted is sort of fantastic. I mean, I remember very well when I was talking on stage about Wedgwood China, and I got up and I said, "And hello, and it's lovely to be here today. And now then, here's a beautiful soup tureen here. This huge, beautiful soup tureen. And now let me tell you the history of this wonderful soup tureen. In fact, if there's Mrs. Jones in the audience and Mrs. Jones would like to know about the soup tureen, please stand up." And of course, Mrs. Jones stood up, and she was very, very heavily pregnant. And I said, "Mrs. Jones, this is for you. You can use it for your baby's bath when it's born, as well as having soup in it later in the evening. Now it doubles up, Mrs. Jones." And I suddenly and Mrs. Jones did go off with the soup tureen. I think I had to buy it from Wedgwood, but it was just sort of how quickly you can go to a restaurant tonight, Sarah, and put your feet in the sand and have the most beautiful evening. You don't have to go always to the highest end restaurant. You don't have to go to, you can go to the local tea room, if you're us, and have a lovely cup of tea. But it's just the chatter and the feeling of the Elevenses, which I love, and the feeling of community spirit and unity in the community. And that is the celebration. And that is what this Tea Talks is about. I think it's brilliant. And anyway, so back to Mrs. Jones. I then said to Mrs. Jones, "But Mrs. Jones, just because you've got a beautiful bit of china on your tablecloth, don't go out and buy a new tablecloth. Use a sheet, go to next door neighbor's garden, steal off the ivy off her tree, you're doing her a favor, or steal the ivy off the walls, or not steal, ask her, okay, for anyone who's going to say don't do that, and trellis the ivy on the white sheet, and then put a jam jar with wildflowers in the middle of the tablecloth, and you have your soup tureen, Mrs. Jones, if in fact that's Mrs. Jones, and voila, you have a beautiful table setting. And that is what I love to do, and that's why I do it with you, Sarah. So I need to see the table setting tonight, please.
Okay, I will definitely send it to you. And it's funny you say that, because literally yesterday, Steve's like, what are all these boxes you've bought? And I said, oh, well, I ordered a load of things for table setting, because I just thought when we've got your guests coming over as we've got, and actually I love setting a table. So I've got a whole series of things, which is like a coastal design. So I've got, I'm going to have to take pictures, but I've got, starfish, and I've got all sorts of things and nets and all of that to do that. And then I've got a pink flamingo one. Of course I have, I have to have pink. So I've bought all these different tables. Well, I say all these different, I've got two different table settings so that I can really kind of set a scene.
Well, Sarah, what I enjoy about the opening of that little bit of pink talk you just did then was because you said all these guests coming. Thanks for the invite. I'm coming. Yeah. I'm coming. I want. Okay. All right. I will leave here and I will come for one night just to have a pink flamingo night with you. Let's do tea talks from your house with pink flamingos.
Come on over. Come on over. I will get the flamingos out.
But no posh lobster or crab or shellfish.
No. We'll go. Yeah. I never worry about the food. If I've laid the table and you walk in and it looks fabulous, and then I pour in the pink champagne, we can kind of forget whether the food's great or not.
Well, you would have buckets of pink champagne with flamingo, wouldn't you? And also the other thing is, I find that very interesting, because if you're in America, everyone would be giggling at you now because you laid the table.
Oh, I laid it. I've laid the table.
You laid the table. But in America, you set the table.
I'm setting it. I must set my table, not lay my table.
Well, no, you can in Britain, but it's like a new language, like lifts and elevators.
We do have lovely listeners in America. So for those listeners, I will set my table with my flamingos and my coastal.
Oh, my gosh. I am Anglo-American. So that's why I love the idea of laying a setting and things. Anyway, so I'm very excited about this dinner tonight with your feet in the sand. I really want to be there. I want to be there.
Oh, come on then, quick, get on a flight.
Yeah.
Talking of pink, look at this. My lovely niece gave me this, but I love it. That is definitely coming with me tonight. Look how beachy that is. And it's pink.
Sarah Thompson has pulled up, for those people who aren't watching, a bright pink, fabulous handbag, which is so fabulously neon, you wouldn't miss her. So with my voice and my red hair and her pink head handbag, we wouldn't be able to go unobtrusive anywhere. But Sarah, tell me, do you have pink shoes that like Sydney Opera House to go with
it? Well, I've got those pink Sydney Opera House shoes that I could wear. But you know what? I think I'll be in flippies tonight, flip-flops.
So you're talking handbags to me, who doesn't really do, you know.
You love your pom-pom basket. Where is it? You've always got that near you.
Yes, I have. I do have a Barky, which goes everywhere with me, and I will show you Barky. I think I have shown Barky before, have I?
I don't think so.
Oh, no. I did. I showed Barky on Loose Women.
Loose Women on here. Yeah. What do you keep in Barky then?
If Barky stays in the car, I put everything in Barky, and then as I get to the venue or wherever I'm going, I then take out a smaller bag and just take out what I need. So Barky always becomes the essential place to carry a load of old rubbish that you don't want and that you don't want loitering anywhere. But always a lip gloss, always a handkerchief, a cotton handkerchief, always cotton handkerchiefs, and always a smint. You know, I don't know, always a smint and hairbrush.
You course. Must have a pen. You've always got a lovely pen.
I have them. I have loads of pens. I am a penaholic. I like loads of pens. I know me well. And I have loads of little notepads to write on. Always notepads. Always write my 10 points before I go into a meeting. What do I want to achieve? How do I? I have it in my hand, actually. Put it in your hand. And so when you're getting caught in meetings, you can just read your 10 points. So you've cleared your 10 points before the end of the meeting. So that's why I have a notepad and pen in my handbag.
By the way, why did you call it Barky?
Because I'm still a six-year-old child, and it amuses me. And and dogs bark, and my basket is, of course, I'll go and get it in a minute to show you. I'll take a picture of me holding Barky, and then the listener will be able to see Barky, and you'll understand that it really is quite extraordinary because it jingle jangles as I come along. So it's like my bark. So it's Barky. So everywhere it goes, it makes a noise. And so Jack and usually my grandchildren, everybody hears me coming because it has bells on it. And so it's called Barky. It's called Gigi's Barky.
Aw, so cute.
My mother had a necklace, which I can also show you. I used to remember my children getting very excited when Granny came down the corridor. My mother, not the other granny. They got very excited by that granny too. Both grannies, but they certainly knew when my mum was coming down because her necklace jangled.
Aww. And actually, the other granny always carried a handbag.
She did, always carried a handbag, always. And everyone wanted to know what was in it. And of course, the best line ever was marmalade sandwich.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
So yeah, talking of change, because now I'm here in Spain, but this was interesting. So are you a fubba? Do you know what a fubba is? Well, I didn't know.
Absolutely not. No. What is a fubba?
You don't worry, because I had no idea. But apparently a fubba is the practice of ignoring or snubbing people in favor of your smartphone. I think we all know a few people who do this. And apparently it's becoming a worldwide problem. So basically it's when you're sitting next to a partner or people and you are busy on the phone. And apparently it comes from the words phone and snub. So people becoming extremely rude basically and lost the art of conversation and instead of that are constantly on their phone. I think we mentioned before about taking it to bed and things, but I've got this funny story actually that I remember because I'm the one for using my phone as a kind of decoy mechanism. So I used to, you remember the flat that I had in London, and it was a lovely doorman. To be fair, he was very lovely, and hopefully he's not listening, but boy, could he chat. I mean, literally in the 12 paces it took me to walk past him, it was a 20-minute chat if I wasn't doing something. So he must have thought I was the busiest person ever because I used to then take to walking in the door with my phone. So I'd get my phone and I'd be saying, yes, no, that's fine. Okay, well, if you can just sort out. Yeah, no, okay, no, was it 12 o'clock? Okay, can you send me the actual time? Anyway, just pretending I'm having some sort of chit chat. And of course, there I am literally on my way past him. And then my phone starts ringing while I'm mid conversation.
No. No. Oh my God.
You know what? He was so bright that he said to me, I've always known that that's what you do. And I was just mortified, literally mortified.
Oh my God. I feel really embarrassed.
I felt actually sick even saying it again. But I said, Barry, I don't do that all the time. Honestly, I said, it's just like, oh, sorry. I'm such a rush today, blah, blah. But it was mortifying. So yeah, is that a fubba? I think so.
Yeah, I think that's a massive fubba. And I think it's a very good one. I can't top that. Thank you, Sarah. you can lead the fubba chat.
Lead the fubba.
Because also the other thing is that I think, you know, you never know. Oh my goodness me. I was thinking all weekend. You never know when someone could take your conversation.
That's true.
You want to say afterwards, but I didn't say it that way. I said it that way or whatever, you know, or I was joking or And so I think the FUBA is actually, now it's got a name to it, I think we need to really be, I really, whoever invented it, you're quite right, you know, because we need to be mindful of this little machine that can cause a lot of damage. It can also bring a lot of joy. It can also spread great words. It can also bring hope to people with, I mean, it can pay bills in Africa. And Rufus, my friend in Kenya, he can actually put a little video on and put his film out to impact education out there in order that he can get his film out. So he's a filmmaker. So if, and Joseph, his other friend, was on the dump in Sierra Leone and he had his telephone. They always seem to have a telephone, right? So yes and no.
Mm. I agree. I mean, they are. I mean, it's the one thing, isn't it, that we do so much. Our world is on it now. All our contacts are on it. Our photos are on it. You know, notes of everything's on it. It literally is your world. And I mean, most of us get absolute phone panicking if it's not near you or you've left it somewhere or you think you might have lost it. You know, in fact, I love those. There's holidays now. I forgot what they've called them, but there's holidays you can go where actually there is literally no Wi-Fi. And so you've got a Wi-Fi holiday. And I think that's pretty cool. And I think there's probably quite a lot of people want their partner to go on one of those.
On the Wi-Fi free holiday. Yeah. Wi-Fi. Without one, yeah. I did leave my telephone in a taxi the other day, and I, you know, freaked out because I didn't have the machine, the button which said you got to find your telephone or find your phone, right? And I thought, oh my goodness me. Anyway, and of course, didn't take the number plate of the taxi. It was a black cab, and I love black cabs. I'm fighting for black cabs. Anyway, and we managed to put on a sign on the telephone saying, if any nice person could possibly call this number, please call. And eventually, 24 hours later, a nice person did pick it up and did ring. And we did get the telephone back. And I did then send a sort of hamper of goodies and thank you notes and everything I can possibly muster to thank him for being a real human being and a chivalry is not dead. And what a charming man. And eventually, cut to 6 months later, one of my best friends, Jules, was sitting next door to this man at dinner, and he said, oh, I think I know your friend, and this is what happened. So I was, it's such an extraordinary circle of life, isn't it? That it was such a, so there is FUBAs, yes, and no, and good people, and Barry, the doorman, yes, Barry the doorman, we love you and we're so pleased that you really, we really know Barry the doorman did know that Sarah was actually fubbering him.
Yeah, I'm really mortified that I am a fubber and that I did that to Barry. But you, well, how would you deal with, I am actually not very good at this, even at a dinner party, not a dinner party, a drinks party, when you get stuck talking to someone and you want to actually move on. What's the etiquette? How do you do it politely?
Well, it depends which country you're in. Of course, there's all different cultures you must always be aware of. And I love that I love to, my father, mother and father always brought me up to think of lots of different cultures in life. And if you're in British Downton Abbey, you'd get to a point and you'd say, do you know, 1 second, could you hold that thought? Because I've just got to go and see Fred over there because I've got to give him a message. And by the time that the person you're talking to has gone on to the next subject, they've forgotten that you were coming back to tell something about Fred. The next thing is if someone asks you a really tricky question you don't want to answer, you went, oh, that's so interesting. I tell you what, I'm going to throw that question to, what's your name again? Oh, Matilda. Matilda, what do you think about that question? And you've thrown the ball again. And then the last really good one, this is an Italian told me this one. He said, if you're really busy and you have 3 parties a night and you don't know how you're going to manage, what you do is you walk through the door, you go in very loudly and you walk all the way around the room and you're so loud that most people are going, oh my goodness, it's so loud, da 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 da. Then you leave after 5 minutes. And so everyone, the host and everyone will say, oh, but I didn't see whoever, Fifi, tonight. And, oh, I didn't see Sarah tonight. And everyone in the room says, oh, well, we did. We saw Sarah. So the guest thinks you've been there all night because they're not counting how many minutes you're there, you see. So you just do that three times over. And then the last bit about being polite is that it is entrenched in me. It is entrenched in me. And I think I always say to my girls, when you're out on the public stage, smile. And if you don't want to be polite, don't go out on the public stage because no one wants to see a grumpy princess. You've heard me say that many times. So I think the most important thing is you got to get your game. You got to get your game on. And also, I think every single somebody in Formula One once told me this before I got married. I was in went everywhere in Formula One, and someone I watched him, and he was chatting to the sponsors, and he was so charming. He was called Crichton Stewart. He was such a charming man. And I eventually went up to him and I said, he was in PR and sponsorship. And I went up and I said, Crichton, how do you do it? And he said, I said, you're so charming. He said, because I believe that every single person in the world has something beautiful inside of them. You just got to really take the time to look at it and find it and get them to tell you it or show you it. And I believe everyone has that creative ability inside of them, and it makes it a really exciting time for me because I go to find it. It's like finding the treasure in a human. Mm. Kind of love that.
I know. I love the way that you find people. I think a bit more than I do, if I'm honest. But you find people fascinating, don't you? You love getting their stories out.
Love it. Love it. I love going through a hotel, there was a lady the other day when we did our podcast at the Fairmont. Mm. And as I walked in, I could see her coming. I could see for sure. And I could see her. And I was just going, okay, I bet she was in British Airways for 20 years. She had that real sort of polished professional look about her. And it was lovely that I'd made up the entire story about this poor lady. And when she came close to me and got in the elevator, suddenly I said, can I just ask you, were you with British Airways? And she said, yes, I was. And I said, well, you're just so professional. But I love the way that I'd made up that story. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also my mother and father brought me up to be very polite. And they always said, manners cost nothing.
Yeah.
No fubbing for you.
No, I know. I'm getting rid of my fubbing.
I actually think it was really good of you to be so honest about your fubbing with Barry. So oh. Well done.
Oh, thank
before,
you.
Before all those listeners that love you more than me, they're all be going, no, don't be nasty to Sarah. I'm not.
I owned it. I did at least own it. I owned my fubbing, but I did feel bad. I felt really bad. So the next one is, this was another one. So Dancing Away with Grief. You're not going to believe this one. Well, I couldn't quite believe it. But anyway, an artist has created a portable disco kiosk where people can shake out their grief by dancing away their tears. It's been created by artist Danny Nicholson. And basically, it's going to be they're going to put it first of all in London's Canary Wharf, and it's got perspex sides. And essentially, you go in there with all this music, and with everyone watching, you dance away your grief. And I find it, I don't know, maybe I'm just too private, but I find that quite a strange thing that anybody would want to do. What do you think?
Do you know, that's quite interesting actually, because I always talk about grief coming in waves. And so it depends on where exactly you are in your stage of grief. I think it's if in the very, very early days, I think you probably wouldn't want to do it. But if you are, wanting to celebrate, although grief can be a celebration of a memory, because the memories are always there. So perhaps a year on or I think it could be a good way to dance. It's instead of dancing grief, you're dancing celebration of a person's life, if it's about loss of life. And so, or it could be about grief of losing a job, or it could be about grief of losing.
True.
We never know what the grief word is.
True.
But if it is, I kind of like this idea that you can actually dance it off. It's sort of kind of fun. You can. I think with every kind of pain or emotional suffering, you choose to act it out. When Diana died, the world cried. When the Queen died, the world was grieving the loss of their legend, their nation's icon, and the global icon. And it was an excuse to really look at memories and to look at your own life. And I feel really strongly that how interesting that when you go to this Danny's place, you can say, you know, I'm throwing one up for little Johnny. I miss you, Johnny, and I love you, and I'm going to dance you off. I'm going to celebrate with you, and I'm going to remember you by really kicking down and remembering, you love this music, you love that dance. Let's do it.
Actually, you're right. You've changed my mind. I can really see that. And it's funny, isn't it? Like, I'm just sort of thinking back to nights that I've had where, like, you know, you crazy dance until whenever with music. And it's probably one of the best things that you can do kind of to change your frame of mind. You know, it's the most fun. Have you ever danced on a table?
What, after laying it or setting it? Thank you. Don't ring me, I ring you. Anyway, so just quickly, of course, I'm redheaded and Irish, of course. I'm Celtic, actually. Have you?
Yes, I have, and I have many a fun night.
In your Sydney Opera House shoes?
In my Sydney Opera House shoes. Even in my ski boots. And it was it had to be a good old table, I'm telling you.
Sarah, you're right. Before you got me on laying the table and setting the table and dancing on tables, now we add that in as well. Let's take this song, Sacrifice, right? Elton John's Sacrifice. It was my favorite song, and it was when my stepfather died, and my mother then died but loved it, you know. And so whenever it comes on now, I sing along to it. I have them, luckily, this Tea Talks podcast will not take me singing along to it, but it's really up to, I like this idea of Danny because they died 20 years ago, but every time it comes on, I want to sing along and remember them with happiness. So I think that's what I think about that. Mm, yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you now. I think it's a great thing. So yeah, well done. I love that actually when, you know, you're an open mind. I literally thought it was the weirdest thing when I told you that story, but no, I've changed my mind. I think it's great. Okay, so here's a good one about change. It's come to us from Susan from Hertfordshire. She asks us, what is the best way to enjoy yourself through any given moment of change, especially if you may not have envisaged it or anticipated it happening? I guess we've just said a bit about that, haven't we, about how important...
I think we have because of course, a loss is change, and it's a new normal now that you've had a terrible loss or a loss of anything really. So it's again back to Danny and his dancing. I think it's a question of, is there anything you can do about it? Is there anything? Do you need to change yourself? Do you need to change your life? What do you need to do to embrace this new place that is kind of weird for you? And if you can make the change and just embrace it, then put on that music, make the cup of tea and just say, right, okay, okay, I'm jumping off a cliff. Fine. No, don't really jump off a cliff, Susan, but just sort of, I'm taking that leap of courage. And I think that is the, but I always say to everyone, take mini steps. Don't do the giant leap. Do the mini.
I completely agree. And I think a bit of humor where you can bring it, because, you know, even at, you know, the worst and funerals and things, at the end of the day, like you say, you can't change anything about it. And therefore, you've kind of got to see it as the new norm. I completely agree with that. And it's accepting it, isn't it? And it's, but that acceptance might take a while to come to terms with.
You know, when I die, Sarah, could you make sure, please, that everyone's wearing bright colours?
Yeah.
And if they think, well, that's not respecting her wishes. It is respecting my wishes. And I do not need black to respect my wishes. And also, and you need to wear your pink handbag and you need to dance down the aisle.
Yeah.
And everybody will think you're completely bonkers. And that's perfect.
That says also about not taking life too seriously, you know, and, you know, we can all take life too seriously, but actually seeing the funny side and the humour is good fun. And it does lighten the mood.
Well, I think it's taking life earnestly seriously to have a sense of humour. I mean, I remember working for the Teenage Cancer and they said, would you be able to come to a conference, please, and speak about cancer? And I said, yeah, absolutely, sure I can. It's Teenage Cancer, it's in Birmingham. And they said, yes, and all the teenagers have called it the sense of tumour. Mm. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? And I went, what? No, seriously, they want my subject matter to be called a sense of tumour. And of course, my lovely Vicky, who we love, she called me the tea lady. I love that. And Vicky, I can show you a picture of our lovely Vicky. She was an angel. She had three tumors on her face, and she called them all names. And she always said, oh, Edward's arguing with George and George is arguing with Fred. And the teenagers, the way they've managed to get through teenage cancer is by playing pool, listening to music, having jeans cut. You know, it's the ambiance of the teenage cancer units in hospitals. And of course, for me, I suddenly realized, oh my gosh, I've got to make a speech about a sensitive tumor. And yet I'm not, oh my goodness, and I've really got to understand how a teenager thinks. So I went to learn. And all my wonderful friends from the teenage cancer units taught me. So yes, I do understand what you're saying. There we have it.
So here's another one from Emma in Devon. And she said, we know that you're an advocate of healthy living and wellness. This one must be for you. Couldn't possibly be for me. But be honest, what is your guilty pleasure when it comes to indulging in a naughty treat?
Right. Okay, Emma from Devon. And I love the way Sarah has asked me that question, right? Making out that I don't dance on tables or don't have flamencos or sit everything. For goodness sake, would we be friends? Would we have a tea talk? Thank you very much. I think that I definitely do maintain an alkaline diet, and I'm really, really stringent about it during the weekdays sometimes. But Emma, the thing is that I really, ever since I worked for Weight Watchers for 12 years, I suddenly thought everyone talks about a chocolate cake and eating sugar as a treat. And yet, of course, anybody really healthy knows that sugar is such an inflammation of the body and inflammatory to the body. And of course, it's so interesting that we say, oh, nice big birthday cake full of sugar and nice, let's have this and it'll be such a treat. And how interesting, isn't it? So sort of play on words. Anyway, my fun is I like mayonnaise in my baked potato because I'm a savory person. I eat potato crisps, which I love. Red Leicester's, double Red Leicester's mini cheddars. And then as Sarah has now told you and the entire world, I like pink champagne. What about you then, Sarah? Because you can't eat that easily.
Oh, I do love a bit of ice cream, I have to say. That's probably mine. When I'm putting, you know, drink to the side, because that was definitely my guilty pleasure. I mean, when you talk about Weight Watchers, the number of times I've done Weight Watchers and I literally would rather not eat in order to have my glass of wine. So that is pretty bad, isn't it? But so that comes top of my wish list, I have to say.
But it's 2 points for a glass of wine on Weight Watchers. Now tell me about...
Yeah, but how big's the glass? That's the thing. I tell myself that's 2 points and then pour a lovely large glass.
Tell me about the ice, what flavour ice cream, please. That's really important.
Well, I'm very boring. I'm very vanilla. I love vanilla ice cream, literally love vanilla ice cream. Look at you. That's very boring, isn't it? But yeah, no, I do. Or mint choc chip.
My favourite ice cream is from a station called Donoratico Station in Italy. Lemon sorbet mixed with raspberry sorbet mixed with vanilla all in one big cone. Oh, yes.
Oh, you're a cone, not a tub, girl.
Cone? Yeah, I'm a 99 with a flake. Thank you very much. I had the fish and chip van at Thursdays at 6 o'clock down on my bicycle with the basket, putting the fish and chips in my basket. Ice cream by Kathleen. Kathleen drove the ice cream van.
I think it's quite sad that all of that's gone. Like even the milkman, it's all change. Okay, so last one is we have got, this is an interesting one. We were actually talking about this slightly earlier, but Susie from Clapham asks, I've heard all about the intriguing royal dinner etiquettes. Have you got anything to spill?
So Susie from Clapham, you say spill and I say, I'm going to drink. Ha ha ha, Susie, you can drink or spill. And I'm going to show you that I'm drinking out of a lovely, beautiful cup and saucer. Like this. For those of you who are not looking at this, I am. And wait, hold on. It's beautiful china, right? But going back I was going to say about the most important thing about it's not royal etiquette. It's just, if you watch Downton Abbey, the etiquette of the ruler and how you set and lay the table for Americans and things like that, and or for anybody, I think it's so lovely to take in people's cultures. And so I think that's the key, is never presume, never be complacent, and always, always, it's not dietary requirements. It's just making sure that, you know, people, that you don't put food in front of them that they, that is not in there, it's not what they're used to. And I think that's really beautiful. You can make something so special. Like,
but if I came to dinner and you didn't know me, what would you put in front of me to eat?
Well, it's very kind of you to come for dinner and not supper, because I like dinner. And supper, as I asked Alistair Bruce to tell me, is after, in the olden days, it's after theatre, you had supper, which was a cake and a cup of tea. Okay, so you're coming to supper, you're coming to dinner, Sarah?
I'm coming to dinner.
Oh, you're coming to dinner. Are you bringing Steve, the pilot, or not?
Yes, I'm bringing Steve, the pilot.
Okay. Well, so I personally will have telephoned through to your office and found out exactly what your favourite foods are, what you like to eat, what he likes to eat. I would not ask you your dietary requirements, because I would have already found it out, because you're my guest in my house. I would also have known that you love pink. So I would have made a cake in the shape, because I think you'd find it amusing, of a crown with can you imagine it like this? Because I know what you'd do is you'd take the cake and then you, with a bit of that, and you put it on your head. I know you. So there you have it. Thank you, Sienna. I've just nicked this off Bunny's head. but actually that answers it very, very nicely, because you would have been really touched that I'd thought and made a pink cake in the shape of a crown for you.
I would be very touched by that, yeah. So when am I coming?
Well, when you stop gallivanting and jumping on the tables in Spain, could you, you know, then you can come. But, you know, well, you might. No, I think I've got some flamencos somewhere here.
Yay!
I'll just go to the zoo and catch one.
So that's it for another episode of Tea Talks with the Duchess and Sarah.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can send me a message on Instagram at SarahFerguson15.
Or me at SarahJaneThompson_.
Thanks also to our producers, who you can also directly email at teatalks@viral-tribe.com.
If you can, please subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode. And when you can, please leave a stellar review and rating.
Right, that's enough from us. See you next time.